It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Great panel. Aaron Griffith from Wired, Brianna Wu, Space Cat Gal, and candidate for Congress, and Dan Patterson from CBS Interactive. We're going to talk about new social media guidelines for reporters at the Times. Are they a good idea, a bad idea? Twitter says we're gonna change things. Honest, we'll talk about Darth Vader and his friends and the best-selling game in America. It's gone platinum. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 636, recorded Sunday, October 15th, 2017. A fat suit for your phone? This Week in Tech is brought to you by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect it from ransomware and hacker attacks with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free at Carbonite.com. But don't forget to use the offer code TWIT so you get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second generation Eero is here. Tri-band, twice as fast. And you can get free overnight shipping when you visit Eero.com. Select overnight shipping at checkout and enter our promo code TWIT. And by IT Pro TV. A good IT pro is always learning, and IT Pro TV is the resource to keep you and your team's skills up to date. Visit itpro.tv/TWIT and use the code TWIT30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door or in your backyard from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/twit and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the great, late great tech news. This week's tech news with a panel of brilliant people. Aaron Griffith is here. Her new job, I'm thrilled to say, senior writer at Wired. She came from Fortune. And we met at the podcast Upfronts a couple of years ago.
How many of those have they had now? Three?
They had another one. They just had another one in September. And they're bigger and more important than ever.
How big is the podcast advertising industry now? Like, how big of a market is that?
Not as big as I'd like it to be.
Pretty small. Smaller than the amount of coverage and hype that it gets. I think people would be surprised at how small it actually is compared to...
Aaron, it's a renaissance. We're having a renaissance.
Right.
Please.
It's the wrong thing to say on a podcast, right?
No, it's the right thing to say. It's the honest thing to say. And you, I always want you to... That's a good point. I mean, radio... I just saw the stat for radio ad sales.
Were like 18 billion years ago.
18 billion, something like that. But we get a tiny, tiny fraction of that.
Hundreds of millions still, right?
I don't even know if it's that high, to be honest, still. Our net, our revenue net of commissions last year was 9.8 million. But we're one of the largest independent podcast networks. But if you say there's 10 of them, I wouldn't know. I don't bet it's not hundreds. Unless there's a really long
tail. I was thinking
tail.
I read like 150 a couple of years, 150 to 200.
But that's all a guess. Nobody ever asked me. And I tell people.
That's because you say it out loud.
I tell people, but I'm sure Panoply and Gimlet aren't saying what their revenue is, because I think it's probably a low number. You don't make a lot of money in podcasts. Remember that, everybody, and stay away. Dan Patterson's also here from Tech Republic at CBS Interactive. Always a good friend. Great to see you again, Dan.
Always great to be here. I remember podcasting back when you had to hand code that XML and put that orange button on your site, and Adam Curry's pod show was going to change the world.
I did. I handcrafted our RSS feeds for probably a year or two.
Yeah, me too.
You make it sound artisanal.
You know what the name of our agency, the ad sales agency that sells our ads, is called? Artisanal. Because we are handmade media. We make each show by hand.
What's the Etsy of media?
Us. Us. Hey, you know who else is here? It's really great to welcome back Brianna Wu. We love Brianna, Space Cat Gal. She's a game developer, giant space cat, but also running for Congress in the Massachusetts 8th District. And there will be an election someday.
Someday, next year. It's going to be probably in September. So your opponent, got work to do.
Your opponent has run without opposition for some time. Isn't that right?
Quite a while. You know, he had a union challenger a few years ago, but they didn't manage to, you know, make a significant dent. And I think people are ready for a change.
Yeah. That's the opponent in the Democratic primaries. And then
yeah,
there would be an election.
That's correct. I'm trying to primary him. He's he's not a Democrat, in my opinion. He's he's very weak on women's rights. He got into politics originally to actually fight against gay rights. He voted against the assault weapons ban.
He got into politics because he wanted to fight gay rights.
Absolutely.
As a Democrat?
Absolutely.
It's good to have a cause.
As a Democrat.
Good to have a cause. Wow.
In Massachusetts.
Yeah, the one of the first bills he tried to pass when he was in the state house was a bill that would actually basically erase hate crimes against gay people and transgender people. Wow. If it was found out that the gay or transgender person was acting quote unquote lasciviously. This was in the Gwen Arujo and Matthew Shepard era. So that's
talk
where
about
I'm going
blaming
up
the victim. Oh, you were acting lasciviously. It's okay to beat you up.
Right.
Oh,
pretty shocking
God.
Stuff.
Wow.
Well, we've fortunately come a long way. Maybe it's time to elect Brianna Wu in the Massachusetts. I'm just saying.
There we go.
Yep. We actually, we were talking before the show because Dan's kind of jokingly said, I don't want to state anything about my politics, but you do, in fact, I think all three of you are not hiding your political slant one way or the other, but the New York Times published what has become a somewhat controversial letter. This is from Dean Baskett, their executive. Actually, I don't know if they published it. Well, they did. It's in the New York Times. No, they did. New social media guidelines. We believe that to remain the world's best news organization, we have to maintain a vibrant presence on social media, but we also need to make sure we're engaging responsibly in social media in line with the values of our newsroom. So they've updated their guidelines. Is this something every media outlet should adopt? For instance, our journalists must not express partisan opinions, promote political views, endorse candidates, make offensive comments, or do anything that undercuts the Times' journalistic reputation. I guess if you're tweeting as a Times reporter, that's not unreasonable.
That's why they have columnists, though, and that's why they keep their columnists separate from their journalists. The columnists can express all kinds of opinions, and that's their job. And I think that line gets blurred a lot in people's minds because a lot of digital writers are columnists or they express opinions and then they also do reporting. They're kind of like in this hybrid role. But at old school places like the Times, the line is very clear.
And new school places like ESPN, but we'll get to that in a second. We consider, this is the one that I think some people bridled at, we consider all social media activity by our journalists to come under this policy. You may think your Facebook page, Twitter feed, Instagram, Snapchat, or other social media accounts are private zones and separate from your role at the Times, but everything we post or like is to some degree public. What do you think, Dan? Is that an appropriate concern?
Well, yeah, whether Bakay needs to write this and articulate it or not, although maybe it is important for the reasons Aaron's just mentioned, that often, particularly in this age of social media, it's easy to conflate opinion with fact. And a place like the Times is often under attack for being liberal or leaning left. And for him to say, these are what our policies are, maybe that helps create a little more transparency in their operations. I would say just as a journalist, I love CBSI and nobody tells me what to think or what to write, but I don't express opinions like we just talked about in the pre-show. I don't express opinions publicly because it undermines my work. I can't report on politics. It's like writing about the iPhone and Android and saying you have a preference, you know, it undermines the faith and confidence readers have. And whether somebody wants to believe in me, it's not about me. And the story is not about me. The story is about the story. And if I make it about my political opinions, it undermines not just faith in me, but faith and confidence in the story. And we need that now more than ever.
Boy, that is so old school.
One thing I noticed that Mike Isaac, who I think everyone knows his Twitter
presence, very
opinionated and just kind of silly and jokey and extremely active on Twitter. And he tweeted something that I thought was, I think, pretty smart, which is that everyone at the Times was pretty much already acting this way, but now this is just kind of codifying it. And so people at the Times, even the most outrageous tweeters aren't upset about it. They kind of know what Dan just articulated, which is that if they want to be taken seriously, they have to be careful about what they put out there.
It's not at all inappropriate. But what's interesting is how important social media has become and how difficult this is because, presumably Times journalists have Facebook accounts for the same reason other people do, to keep track of family and friends. And if you have you might assume your Snapchat posts are not part of your public persona, but that's how Dean wants to treat it. I guess it makes sense. Mike, I don't know if this is in response to this or not, but he did tweet on Friday, "I am going to tweet some great stuff tonight." Can you see this? You got to see how he spelt tweet. So
That's great. That's the most Mike Isaac tweet of all. Something I found, a lot of people don't know this about me. Before I went into engineering, I actually majored in journalism. I worked as an investigative journalist for many years. I think it's a great background for a politician. Something I found when I was trying to write stories, I'll give you an example. I was writing a story in Mississippi about a landlord that didn't want to pay to clean up a toxic waste spill in the middle of their apartment complex. And you had literal residents. They're sitting there all camped around green goo, and they've got hives on their bodies.
Oh, Lord.
And I remember trying to write this story and my editor going, "Well, you're not being objective to the landlord. You're not being objective." And it was, for me personally, I think this is why I make a better politician than a journalist, because I do have a point of view and I can't hide that. So I think I like that the New York Times is holding their reporters to the highest standard possible. I just privately, I'm not convinced that journalistic objectivity really, really exists. We called it the view from nowhere in school, kind of pretending there is no objective truth here and you don't have any perspective as you're gathering facts. I'm just not convinced it's really there privately.
But I don't think that that is the pretense here. I think that that's a pretense that's foisted on a lot of reporters. I think the pretense is exactly what Bekay articulated, which is I, as a reporter, will approach stories fairly and honestly, and I will do my best in that. Just like anybody who goes to their job, your job is to do the best job you possibly can. So I don't think it's that everything is going to be black and white objective. I think it is that I will do my best to be as fair as possible to the story and the subjects in the story.
I think one thing people were criticizing was that this is going to force reporters to do this kind of false equivalency thing that is
balance.
Kind of problematic. A lot of news
That's
stories
dangerous.
Tweet many varieties of, and also the other thing is, I don't know if you follow many people from the Wall Street Journal, but they have the strictest social media policy of any place that I've heard, where they can't even tweet stories that aren't from the Wall Street Journal. And as a result, their Twitter feeds are I'm not totally sure on this, but I'm pretty sure that's still the policy. And a lot of their feeds are pretty boring because they don't really get to comment on stuff that isn't in the journal.
Twitter is such a challenge for everybody. in so many ways. I know, Brianna, you've been attacked viciously on Twitter during Gamergate. Our president uses Twitter in all sorts of interesting and unusual ways. Rose McGowan, of course, this is the most recent kerfuffle on Twitter, immediately eclipsing the Times, was that Rose McGowan, the actress Rose McGowan, who was doing a tweet storm about men in Hollywood, got kicked off Twitter. Her whole account was banned because, according to Twitter, she doxed somebody. She put out a private phone number on a tweet, but they don't have the capability of blocking a tweet or deleting a tweet, so they had to delete her account. And then, as a result, on Friday, there was a boycott. Women are supposed to boycott Twitter. And then Twitter just seems to be a natural place for upset, outrage. It's difficult. And now Jack Dorsey says we're going to have new rules on late Friday. He said we're going to have new rules on how many times this headline could run every 6 months. New rules on hate harassment in response to the boycott, which at least he responded to. He says we're going to have a crackdown on unwanted sexual advances, hate symbols, non-consensual nudity, violent groups, tweets that glorify violence. Starting in just a few weeks, which means, I guess, all of that stuff is currently unblocked and on Twitter. So let me ask Brianna, because Brianna, I'm sure you have a strong opinion about how Twitter is often misused to attack people. Is it?
Well, sure.
What is Twitter to do?
Well, I think I'd like to back up for a second here and say, you know, I've never been suspended from Twitter because I don't find it hard to not threaten people or dox people or use violent language. And, you know, I'm very disappointed that a lot of people on the left were kind of boxed into defending, you know, this private doxing. I mean, it really put me in what felt like an unfair situation.
I don't think you boycotted on Friday.
I thought about it. At first I said no, and I had some people come to me privately and say, please boycott. And I said, okay, fine, I will do it. I can use 24 hours off of Twitter.
It's actually a great feeling, isn't it? Not using Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. I got a lot of stuff done professionally that day. I have said this 1,000 times, Leo, and I want to say it again. Twitter has never gotten the credit it deserves for what they've done on their platform. They have largely gotten rid of their harassment bot problem. As recently as a year ago, there were harassment bots that were targeting me and other journalists. They would just tweet the same doxing thing 100, 1,000 times. Then it would tweet at everyone you interacted with. They finally got that problem solved. I do see the number of the responsiveness they have to death threats. I do see that going down. But I think overall the trajectory of the company is addressing this. Like, look at the feature where, at the bottom of a tweet, it will say show additional replies, some of which may be offensive. You know, this is a really good feature because it blocks most of the garbage. And I have never seen Twitter get the credit it deserves for that. There's a lot more work to go, but I really wish we could change the conversation a bit more to Facebook or Reddit, both of which dox people much more freely than Twitter does.
Here's Jack's tweet storm. We see voices being silenced on Twitter every day. We've been working to counteract this for the past 2 years. It sounds like you agree, Brianna. Others don't, but we prioritized this in 2016. We updated our policies, increased the size of our teams. It wasn't enough. Others might agree. Oh, okay. You're right. You've been doing it, but it hasn't been enough. In 2017, we made it our top priority and made it a lot of progress. Today, we saw voices silencing themselves and voices speaking out because we're still not doing enough. We've been working intensely over the past few months and focused today on making some critical decisions. We've decided to take a more aggressive stance on our rules and how we enforce them. These changes will start rolling out in the next few weeks. More to share next week. That seems like actually the best response I've heard from Twitter in some time, at least public response.
I mean, at least he didn't say, we have to do better.
That's the stock phrase. Yeah.
Gotten tired.
Yeah. Ev used to say that all the time. Ev famously apologized. How long ago was that? I mean, that's exactly what he said. We've got to do better. And then, but it's also a challenge. I'm sympathetic because, as Alex Stamos, the CSO of Facebook said, you guys, this is hard stuff. If you want to have a free platform, people could freely express themselves. Somebody, I read an article that said it was the Arab Spring that really spoiled Twitter because that's when they got in their minds, look, we can be used to change the world if we let people have free speech on Twitter. There's a real social value to that.
They were so naive that they never considered that there's also people out there who are going to exploit that in a negative way. They never it's just sort of that Silicon Valley magical thinking where
it never even occurred
to them. They could only see good coming out of their creation.
And it's very, very convenient that all of the social companies, including Google, figured out Russian tampering and bots after the 2016 election, not while it was going on. In fact, we reached out to Twitter about some of these harassment bots and about the growth of their bots. And they said, oh, we're a public company. We have an incentive to kill all bots on the platform. In fact, at Tech Republic, we covered the rise of bots and just we didn't do any magic. We just covered each presidential candidate and downloaded the Twitter API and put it in Excel. And you can see an inflation of bots through the campaign. So if Twitter wants us to believe this nonsense now, yeah, you guys can be sorry, but you had a huge profit incentive not to be sorry when it mattered.
Would you include Google and Facebook in that?
Yes, absolutely. I believe that these companies say they have a moral core, but these are for-profit public companies. I don't believe that they're inherently evil, but I do believe that they expect us that we're either stupid or naive, that we didn't see this happening a long time ago, or that they didn't see this happening a long time ago.
Or that they saw it and they just didn't care.
Yes, exactly.
Well, they didn't care because they had strong financial incentives not to care.
Yes, precisely.
So something we did at my studios, I spent a lot of time picking apart these bots and doing a lot of independent research on Twitter and harassment bots. And please understand, when I'm talking about harassment bots, I am differentiating a bot that is written to target and dox somebody like me versus like the political propaganda bot. That's a different problem. I can say from my looking at the data, which could be incomplete, but this is just a partial look at it. What I see is like you say a stat like 9/10 of all political opinions came from bots, and that sounds really scary. But then you start looking at the reach of the bots and who's following these bots, and it's not as great. Like there's a really big difference if I tweet something, with 70,000 followers versus somebody tweets it with like 10 followers who's also a robot. So, I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm saying I'm unconvinced about what the impact is of that, and I'd like to look into it deeper.
Yeah, one of the tactical things that the bots intended to do was knowing precisely that. And of course, on Facebook and Google, the echo is significantly larger. On Twitter, of course, right, who's going to follow the account with 3 tweets and no profile picture? But what they tried to do tactically was raise trends in that left-hand column.
Yeah.
And you can see that repeatedly.
So, yeah, all right, I'm going to say something that's controversial, but I'll let you guys yell at me and talk me out of it. Of course, I think you can acknowledge that the Russians probably directly or indirectly at the instruction of Vladimir Putin decided to not necessarily throw the election, perhaps just sow seeds of discord, but decided to really kind of roil the waters in the United States. And they did that using social media. It's easy, particularly easy to do that with Twitter, Facebook. And buying ads on Google since it's an automated process. I think we could stipulate that that happened. We know that that happened. What I'm not sure I'm willing to stipulate is its effect, is how strong an effect it had. I'm not convinced that, for instance, that got Donald Trump elected. I think there were many factors that got him elected, and it delegitimizes some of the legitimate reasons he got elected. It's a fun thing for people who aren't happy with the results of the election by the way, I include myself in that group, but I'm going to try to be objective here. It's a fun thing for people who are unhappy with the results of the election to say, oh, well, it's all Russia's fault. But I'm not convinced that that's the case. And I think if it delegitimizes what may have been real reasons for that to have happened. So talk me out of that. Tell me why. It's illegal, and it's something that even the founding fathers were concerned about, for a foreign nation to interfere with our elections. That's a fact.
I do want to say this.
Go ahead, Brianna, and then Aaron.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to. What I would say is somebody that's actually making like ads and putting them out there, if you saw the list of FEC requirements I have to follow, It is bananas. Like, it is down to the font you put in the bottom of the, you know, the, like, I'm Brianna Wu and I approve this ad. I do think that we need to have a serious talk about, you know, if I put a television ad on that is regulated in so many different ways, why are ads on Twitter and Facebook and Google not regulated in the same way? I think they should be.
And Facebook lobbied long and hard years not to be regulated and convinced the Federal Elections Commission, the FEC, not to require, give them the same requirements that broadcast media have.
Well, back when that's their ads the benefit, were much smaller than they are now on
right,
the page.
Right.
At the time, it was just a teeny little thing.
Right. Don't regulate us. We're a baby industry. Don't tell. We let us grow.
I think it's also important to differentiate that, yes, we need to make sure that we don't marginalize or undermine the other causes of any particular election or the previous one, but that we do say, you know, we're having a conversation about the role technology played and will continue to play, and this is a significant one. It's really important to make sure we understand the mechanics of this so that we don't overshoot it with overregulation or undershoot it and not take it seriously.
Is it solvable? Can you know, we got another.
Is social media solvable?
Well, that's my. Exactly. So 2020, we've got another presidential election. By 2020, that's a pretty long time frame. That's 3 years.
Next year. And this doesn't.
Well,
stop.
Next year
other
is 2018, and Brianna's going to be in that election. But let's give you 3 years. Is it possible to say there will be no Russian interference?
Oh, no.
Well, the ad problem is easy to solve, like with disclosures and more transparency, no more dark ads. And like you said, that maybe didn't have the same size of impact as the fake news problem, which is much, I think, harder to solve and a lot bigger and probably had an outsized effect on the election.
My feeling, again, talk me out of it, is that fake news only worked with people who had already made up their minds. People chose the news they wanted to believe. You can say, well, that's factually untrue. The Pope did not endorse Donald Trump. That isn't really germane. I don't think that convinced anybody. It only reinforced what people already believe.
Well, which could stop you from changing your mind when something like the Access Hollywood tape comes out.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And it's pretty easy to correlate this. You can go to L2 Political. I've never seen a company that has better data than L2 does. And you can see, I don't think the 2016 election is in their database yet, but you can see correlate where there were news items in Facebook and particular counties and how they voted and their demographics. And so it's not like, it's not impossible to answer this question.
It's also the case that due to the Electoral College and the way our president's elections work, you didn't have to sway many votes. You merely had to sway 77,000 votes in key districts.
Yeah.
And I agree that there are lots of questions about how that was done, where how they knew which districts to sway. There's a lot more about this. But I also think you could make the case that, it was very complicated. There were many reasons why the election happened the way it did. And I hate for a number of reasons, for Twitter, Facebook, and Google to become the scapegoats for that.
Here's my cynical response to that, which is that because they are so aggressively arguing that it was very small, it was just a blip compared to the amount of content that's on Facebook, it makes me not believe them, and it makes me want to look into the impact a lot more. That just because that is their response makes me think like there's more to it.
You sure sound guilty. That's what you're saying, right? I don't know.
If I could have one more thing onto this, something we did is we went through all my mentions that happened during the Democratic primary. And I don't think this is talked about enough. So we're seeing a really big division in the Democratic Party between the Bernie wing and the Hillary wing. We went back through that and looked at, you know, this phenomena of Bernie bros and where it came from. And when we really studied in my mentions, the mentions that were the most hostile or, you know, had personal attacks or even doxed me. A lot of those were coming from bots. And, you know, I personally believe they were coming from Russian bots. So I think that this is a bigger problem than like voting for one candidate. I think that Russia is very artificially trying to keep us at each other's throats.
Yes.
I mean, it's so easy to get us so angry at each other and attacking each other. Like, they win when we're divided. It's not even a Republican Republican versus Democrat thing. It's about keeping America angry at each other. So,
Dan, you were in Ukraine. You kind of saw firsthand. The Ukraine is the test tube for Russian interference.
And
with hacking and all sorts of tricks. And I think one case, strong case to be made, is that really Russia wins if Russia's seen as a player.
That's, yes.
Some of this is merely, hey, we're important.
That's the long game. And the long game is to undermine self-confidence and, just like Brianna said, to keep America and their adversaries. It's not just America. It's France. It's Germany and others. But to keep them divided. Look, you can look at – I love the Russian people, but you can look at Soviet military and propaganda tactics going back a century and – you know, one of the ways they messed with us at the Global Cybersecurity Summit was sending thousands of attempts to brute force your accounts. And then they would come into our rooms. They would send dudes to sit next to us. What Russia wants to do is to undermine your own confidence and to make sure that a divided world is a world that Russia can conquer.
Wait, sorry, could you go back? They were in your rooms?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is a long story. I don't want to rabbit hole here. We wrote about some of this. We were attacked with we were at the Global Cybersecurity Summit and we were accompanied by.
This was in the Ukraine.
In Kiev. Yes. But we were with the former chief counsel of the NSA. We were with, Antony Blinken, who is a former secretary of state. So the party we were traveling with were reasonably high profile. And we were at the head of the bank, the heads of state. So the second I got up on stage, every single one of my accounts was hammered. When I went back to our hotel, one of my colleagues who runs an AI company said, hey, I went into my hotel room and, room service had done everything. You know, nobody's drinking water in a glass. And he said, room service had cleaned it up, but I found a half-drank glass of water and a little note that says privet, which is hello in Russian. So
it's like a little saying, hey, we're watching.
Yeah, so I go to the front desk, and of course, the conference was several kilometers away, but I didn't tell them that. I just said, hey, I've been in and out all day. Could you tell me the last time I forgot something in my room the last time I was here? They're like, 12:35. Like, could I have a new room?
Wow.
A few days later, we interviewed the head of the foreign bank, and I come back and I'm writing my notes. I'm working on a story, and these two guys come out. We're right next to the FSB, Russian, they're the new KGB. They were attached to our hotel. So I'm sitting there drinking a beer, working on a story, and this guy, this big dude with tattoos, comes out and sits about 10 yards from me. And then this guy in a crisp white shirt and cheesy black aviators comes over and sits about 10 yards to my right, like satellites. And they're just looking at me. I'm like, Jesus, you guys freak.
You know what's really interesting? A free society and social media make it trivial for people to mess with you, whether it's to create bots to harass you or to bother you in a cafe. And if somebody, whether it's a nation state or just a troll, wants to take advantage of these tools, it's trivially easy. And the only thing stopping them really is societal norms. I don't think you can stop that. How would you propose to stop that? Look what they did with Pokemon Go, for crying out loud. So there's a Russian, among other things, Russians created these YouTube videos, which if you've seen them, are completely non-credible. I can't believe that these swayed anybody. They're supposed to be African-Americans who are voting for Trump and hate Hillary, but they don't speak English. They have African accents. They're clearly not. These are videos not made in the U.S., one of them was a website called DoNotShoot.us, and they created a contest on Pokemon Go that people would go out. They would go to alleged places where there were incidents of police brutality, create Pokemon names corresponding to the names of the victims, and then take over places. And winners of the contest would get Amazon gift cards. No, not clear if anybody got any Amazon gift cards. But the point of this is just to upset people. Now, maybe it's Russians, maybe it wasn't, but it was just trollish behavior. I think we all know you can't stop trolls. Not in a free society. Not in a free society. So what are you going to do?
Well, I would definitely agree with that. I think, like, you go after the big variables here. Like, you assume you're not going to be able to have 100% solution. So, like, you know, it was mentioned the manipulation of trending topics on Twitter. I think clearly they should, like, look at that and try to curb the effect that bots have on it. Like, look at high quality users and make those worth, like, more points. Like, weight the algorithm and how
holes,
that's generated.
You're plugging holes in a dike that's filled with Swiss cheese. You fix the Twitter one, then they're going to use something else and use something else. They're going to sit next to you in a cafe.
Security isn't it's not a destination. It's a process.
It's a process.
Right? You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're not going to be able to finish this, but you've got to keep working on it.
Well, Congress might have a solution. I'm going to try to say this with a straight face. Two members of Congress, one Republican and one a Democrat, proposed a new bill. They call it the AC/DC Act. It's one of those retronyms where they clearly thought up the acronym first, and then decided what it said. Let me see if I can find this. But the premise of the bill is to allow businesses that are being hacked to hack them back, to make it legal for businesses to respond to being hacked. That'll fix it.
Wow.
Any thoughts?
I got nothing.
It's hard not to laugh. I might as well name names. Let's give credit where credit is due. This is Tom Graves, who's a congressman from Georgia, and Kyrsten Sinema, who's from Arizona. The AC/DC stands for the Active Cyber Defense Certainty Act. Which is, of course, nutty. Hmm. Yeah, but that's... But they could...
the use of the word certainty there really throws me.
Yeah, what's the certainty? Graves said, well, it doesn't solve every problem. It brings some light into the dark places where cyber criminals operate. The certainty the bill provides... Well, here, he explains it. Will empower individuals and companies to use new defenses against cyber criminals. I hope it spurs a new generation of tools and methods to level... the lopsided cyber battlefield, if not given edge to cyber defenders.
That sounds like the script to a superhero movie.
Hack 'em back.
Wow.
What could possibly go wrong?
I would say that there is a place in, you know, regulation for Congress to, like, legalize certain kinds of white hat hacking.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, look at
research,
penetration tests.
Pen testing,
like, absolutely. Security research, we have a lot of work we can
and
do.
Nobody
there.
Should ever be a go to jail for doing real legitimate research.
Absolutely. Yeah. But this isn't it. This is like they saw an episode of Mr. Robot and wrote a bad bill based on it.
I presume that it's dead on arrival, but the fact that they even could introduce this bill. It blows my mind that they even could think this was a good idea. Yeah. Oh, let's see what kind of hacking tools Equifax, what viruses Equifax can write and get those bad guys. Get those bad guys. Wow. Just stunning. All right. We're going to take a break. And we can all breathe for a moment. Dan Patterson is here from CBS Interactive. He's a senior writer at Tech Republic. Always a pleasure. I'd like to hear more about the Global Cybersecurity Summit. That sounds really, really interesting. Also with us, Brianna Wu. She is a game developer, an entrepreneur, a founder, and, oh, by the way, running for Congress in the Massachusetts 8th District, BriannaWu2018.com. She's got all of my votes. And Erin Griffith is also here. She's now a senior writer at Wired, her brand new gig. We're thrilled to hear it, and it's great to have you. And she's training for a half marathon, which is why there's a bicycle behind her.
Well, wrong. Not quite the same sport,
you're just very athletic, that's all. Our show today brought to you by Carbonite. One way to keep yourself safe, not by hacking the other guys, but at least backing up your data. Let's at least ask businesses to do that. Protect yourself from acts of God, fire, flood, hurricanes. Gosh knows we see a lot of those these days. From human error. You know, your employees sometimes are your biggest enemies throwing out stuff by accident. And from ransomware, The best solution to all of that, having a great cloud backup. That's what Carbonite does. They're the data protection experts. They've got plans for home and office, for Mac and for PC. They've got high availability. I really want to emphasize that they have plans now for every kind of business. The E2 eVault backup system, which gives you a hard drive on premises that then backs up to the cloud. So you've got the best of both worlds. They've got high availability solutions. They can get your business back up and running. And if you don't think your business is at risk, believe me, that data on the servers in your computer and your system, that's everything. Without that, your building could burn down, but lose the data. Now you're really in trouble. You got to go to Carbonite. Find out more, Carbonite.com, for small, medium, and large businesses and homes as well. Start your free trial today. Just go to Carbonite.com. You can see that 30-day free trial. Put a TWIT in there as the offer code. You'll get 2 bonus months if you decide to buy. These guys are the good guys in the war against data loss. They are the data protection experts. I've used them and known them for years, and I couldn't recommend them more highly. Carbonite.com. Don't forget the offer code TWIT for 2 months. Free. Who's got a dog?
Oh, no, I don't, but that's my neighbors. Let me close the window.
No. I like dogs. No, that's fine. Right. That's fine. We actually, it's funny. We had a one and a half year old in here. I noticed she's left. She was reading a book, though, because she was bored. You know, 1.5 year olds tend to be bored by this show. The book is called Darth Vader and Friends. What is wrong with children today? I'm sorry.
But isn't the idea that I haven't read the book, but isn't the idea that if Darth Vader had had friends, maybe he would have turned out differently?
Oh, is that the idea of the book?
That's just my
guess. Let me steal it from Rose and find out here. Wait and see. Yeah, Darth Vader and Friends. It's got a cute picture of Darth dancing with C-3PO and R2-D2. I like this.
No spoilers.
I am your... No, that's wrong. Oh, I like how it starts. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I can almost hear the music. While ruling the Galactic Empire, Lord Darth Vader aims to crush the Rebel Alliance with a little help from his friends. Wait a minute. His twin children, Luke and Leia, have other plans and powerful friends of their own.
This facility is crude, but it should be adequate to freeze more ice cream.
Leia says, gross. What is that? Is that the Porg? We already got those in here? This is very ahead of its time. Mesa said maybe we... Oh, if Jar Jar's in it, I don't want to read it. We should be in friends with Queen Amidala, not Jar Jar. Okay. Kids today, I tell you. And it's a little Jabba the Hutt in the back.
No bato mikyo no usante de kaho jascheska.
Which means, nobody understands me like you do. Wow. Darth Vader and Friends. Jeffrey Brown. Hardcover Barnes & Noble. $25. Go ahead. Pick it up today. Oh, they got a wall calendar, too. Darth Vader and Friends wall calendar. Get yours today. Okay. That was a little amuse-bouche. A little sherbet to loosen the palate in between courses. Where do we go? Where do we go next? Oh, anybody get one of those specially configured Google Home Minis that Google was handing out at their event? Oh, this is obviously an error, but I think it's a funny error. So, and a little tip to tech companies in general, if you're giving out review units to journalists, you might want to check the always listening feature. Artem Rysakovsky, writing in Android Police, apparently he got one of these minis. And smart guy, he checked his Google recordings. You know, the Google has a dashboard. You could see what recordings. And he noticed a whole bunch of new recordings from a device called Mushroom. And, wait a minute. Not only a whole bunch of them, but like everything he said in his, he put it in his bathroom. Everything he said. And he says several days passed without me noticing anything wrong. In the meantime, the Mini was behaving very differently from all the other Google Homes and Echoes in my home. It was waking up thousands of times a day, recording what it heard, then sending those recordings to Google. The good news is he caught it. One.
Google. All of your fears totally found it.
Yeah. Google sent an email to Google saying, first of all, is the mini called codename Mushroom? And look at my activity, because all of a sudden it looks like it's recording. Please forward this to the Google Home team for response. So 10 minutes later, what? We're looking into it. By that evening, a Google person came to his house.
This is my favorite part of this story. They were in like 10 fire alarm mode.
No
sending
kidding.
A van out to Oakland. Like, we'll be there in a minute.
By 9 o'clock, he wasn't even home. They exchanged the Google Home. They left him with two replacement Home Minis, although you might not want to plug those in until they get back to you. The next day, they said, yes, it turns out there was a hardware issue. The touch, because you can touch the top of a home and it will trigger it. And the thing was sensing touches all the time. And so their fix was to disable the touch. And I presume before everybody else gets their Mini, it will be fixed. But the real question is, did every journalist who got one of those Minis at the Google event, and there were hundreds, were they all being recorded? Thanks to Artem.
Yeah.
Not anymore. That's a bad story, because it confirms what a lot of people think, that the echoes, they're listening to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I trust that Google has good intentions here, and I read this as just a development bug. Yeah. I don't think anything like nefarious is going on here. But the issue, like, there's another story we're going to talk about later with antivirus software being used to help with Russian spying. And the issue here for me isn't that I don't trust Google. It's that I don't trust the security and the integrity of these devices, particularly when they open up the API to other people. I have an Android phone, but I would never put this or the Amazon one in my home, and probably not even the Apple one. It's just it's a level too far. And I think if you're a high risk target for this kind of activity, I just don't think it's safe.
Well said. Dan, would you bring a smartphone to something like the Global Security Summit? I know most people go to DEF CON and Black Hat are very careful about what stuff they bring.
Yeah, you know my answer. I think what Brianna just said is right. It's probably not Amazon or Google, although these are bad stories for IoT consumer stuff. But it is the security of these devices themselves. I brought an iOS device to Kiev expecting some things. My device was fine. Everyone with an Android device, this is not me being political, but everyone with an Android device was hacked.
No kidding.
Simply because there are more threat vectors, and you have a broader spectrum of operating systems, hardware, and if you don't take best practices, you're going to get hacked no matter what.
Do you guys agree? I hear this a lot from security people that if you want to be secure, don't use an Android phone. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
You do?
I do. I'm not trying to be an Apple fangirl here, but there's a reason I stick to all Apple. And it's primarily is the threat vector, just like you said, with so many different phones and different operating systems. There's just there's so many ways to get through an Android device that, Apple, it's not even that I think it's that much more secure, but it's like, when it's that limited, the number of ways to attack it, I just think it's easier for them to plug those holes. So, as somebody that worries a lot about cybersecurity, it's why I use Apple products.
I got a call on the radio show today from somebody who said my wife has an iPhone 7 and it keeps bugging her to upgrade to iOS 11. How do I turn that off? And I said, well, I understand why it's bugging you, but one of the reasons the vast majority of Apple users are running the most recent operating system is because of this. Apple has the ability to push the update out and then bug you until you do it. And it's actually really good security practice. The problem with Android phones is that they can't do that. They can't force an update. And
there's also, stingrays are less common here, although they will become more common as hardware costs go down. And, stingrays, you don't think about this, but it's hardware that can pull encryption keys right off of your phone.
So explain what a stingray is before you.
So a stingray is a it's a device that transmits fake signals, and you can connect. So a fake T-Mobile, fake AT&T, fake Verizon, and your phone is configured to just connect to a network. So especially when you go overseas and you kind of have different or weird networks you may be getting on, a Stingray is designed, and they have these at the White House, they have these at large sporting events, but it's designed because it'll also fill the air with noise and make it harder to connect. But you can, when you're connected to a Stingray, the amount of data that a hacker, that an attacker has access to is significantly more. A zero day would be the only way they could get more data than connecting using a Stingray. And with iOS, even with iOS, many of your encryption keys are exposed to a Stingray through the cellular network. And with Android, there are simply more threat vectors. There are more ways that an attacker can get into your phone for all the reasons you guys and Leo just enumerated. There's just more threat vectors, and people take security less seriously on those devices. So a Stingray will just slurp that up.
Federal agencies known to use.
It can get your public key.
Basically, you join it as a trusted cell site.
Yeah,
sure.
So your phone goes, I trust you.
But you're talking about the encryption key. Like, I can see it, like, giving your public key out there. How can it get your private key in addition to that? Like, is it can, like, all the computation is still, yeah.
It can man in the middle an SSL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And often there are stories, I don't know if this is true or not, but there are stories that Stingrays can see your private keys in iOS. I don't know that I buy that, but this is floating around in dark web forums. But what it can do, it's just like Leo said, a man in the middle. It's like if you had a Wireshark or something pulling packets down, except you had access to all this, unless it was encrypted in transit, that data is just open.
Wow.
So here, according to the ACLU, are U.S. law enforcement agencies that use Stingrays, including the IRS, FBI, NSA, Special Ops, National Guard, U.S. Army, and local law enforcement as well. In California, for instance, local and state police have cell site simulators or Stingrays. Let's see. Massachusetts local police have cell site simulators. You guys are in New York State. Yes, local and state police have cell site simulators. So just to be aware. Now, I'm less worried about, frankly, about law enforcement, obviously, and much more worried about hackers. But the whole thing, it underscores the insecurity of cell phones. And here's a great post from Philip P.N., who's the co-founder of Shotwell Labs. He says, want to see something crazy? Open this link on your phone with Wi-Fi turned off. I'm not going to give it out. But it is essentially all the information that your carrier knows about you, including your home address, phone number, cell phone, contract details, and latitude and longitude, describing the current location of your cell phone. And this is information not only that they call, AT&T calls it mobile identity API. There is on your cell phone an API that can be used to look up all of this information. Telco providers offer this. Cell phones are horrifically insecure. U.S. telcos appear, according to this article, appear to be selling direct non-anonymized real-time access to consumer telephone data to third-party services, not just federal law enforcement officials who are then selling access to that data. Hey, it's a good way to make money. So
it's a terrible way to make money if your job is to
if you're AT&T, it's a good way to make money.
Essential service to people.
This is
expectation that that'll be private.
And then, of course, we know that the radio baseband software in all cell phones, and I don't know if Apple has mitigated this or not, but the baseband software is highly hackable. And we've seen that be abused. Now, that takes some sophistication on the part of the attacker, but I don't think there's any any doubt that attackers are very sophisticated these days. I don't know. Why did this get to be the bad news show? I apologize.
Sorry.
Yeah, I would have to say about that. Like, this is the first I'm hearing about this, so I'm talking off the top of my head. But Yeah, I think that if you're talking about law enforcement using these techniques, they clearly need to go to court and get a search warrant, right? Like warrantless wiretaps. Right. I have no issue. Go before a judge, prove probable cause. I'm all for it. I will, if I'm in Congress, I'll give you everything you need for that. But warrantless wiretaps, like, it's very clearly unconstitutional, and both parties have done a lot to erode that. As far as the AT&T thing, you know, something I've looked into and I've talked to a lot of lawyers about is if we introduce liability into the equation and we say, okay, AT&T, like, clearly Congress can't regulate how you should code your software because that's not going to go well. But if you're reckless in how you're doing it, and clearly an API that anyone can access with that kind of information, that strikes me as reckless. You know, you should encrypt that. You should have public keys, private keys, whatever you need to do to secure that. I would introduce liability into the equation. And if they happen to have an Equifax level event, I think they would have to pay for it. So
I think Equifax has set a very high standard now for what an Equifax.
Well, still, but they were reckless with it.
It's
you
reckless.
And I and everyone on the
By the
show
way, I think the link no longer works. So that's the good news. But Dwight Silverman tweeted that out. All right, here's a little something to cheer you up. Tim Cook speaking to students at Oxford University question and answer session has a little. I would call this a wardrobe malfunction. Can you show the animated GIF? There's something in his pocket. Oh, it's falling out of his. Oh, that's an iPhone 10, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. You could tell by the. Okay. And he hides it immediately. His iPhone 10 just. So he's wearing slippery slacks, but I must compliment him on his choice of socks. I think those are. Why he's pulling down his pants after. I think he's embarrassed that people are. I don't know. It's. All right. That was, again, another amuse-bouche. We have to break up the bad news with occasional.
Was there a point? I mean, I saw that being shared everywhere, and I was like, are people just commenting?
No, it's just
commenting?
Funny. It's you don't learn anything about it. It's just funny.
Like, the phone's so bad.
Well, it is slippery. It's got to be slippery. It's glass. But I don't think that's really. You could put a. Who
it's an
carries
argument
a,
for man purses.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And who carries around a phone without a case? But anyway, right? Doesn't everybody?
I don't.
Really?
Nope. My phone goes naked.
You go bareback? Why don't you have a case?
Because I think the life of a phone is to get scratched, and it's like
it's destiny.
Apple,
It's its destiny.
Apple spends all this time every year making it thinner and lighter. It's more beautiful. It's like if you lost 20 pounds and then you celebrated by going and putting on a fat suit. I just don't. Like, it just doesn't. It just feels wrong.
See, what
to
you're
me.
Saying is a case for your phone is like putting a fat suit on it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That sounds like someone who has not cracked that many screens.
That's you. Obviously, don't drop your phones. Exactly right. Yep.
I have Apple Care.
Oh, yeah. So they're hiding the real cost of your negligence. All right. No, I'm just joking. I'm teasing. So we're going to take a break. We will. I guess we should get, now that we've talked about iPhones, we should probably talk a little bit about the rumor mill. And we're all waiting 12 days and counting until you can order an iPhone 10. A fat suit for your phone.
I like sorry.
No, that's the best description I've ever heard. That's absolutely awesome. Our show today brought to you by the Eero. I am in love with my Eero. Eero is revolutionizing Wi-Fi. Obviously, Brianna has one because I could tell by her gasp.
I love it.
Isn't it awesome? How many of you, show of hands out there, I know many of you have trouble with Wi-Fi, right? It drops. You got buffering when you're trying to watch a movie. It's just annoying as heck. Eero solves all this. Eero is more than Wi-Fi. It's modern. It's and the new second generation Eero is tri-band, so it's got a 2.4 gigahertz radio and dual 2.5 gigahertz radios. It's twice as fast. It's the easiest way. Look at that. You plug the new beacons right into the wall. That's it. No wires. And you're extending your Wi-Fi throughout your house. Now, it's not like a traditional Wi-Fi extender. A Wi-Fi extender cuts your Wi-Fi speed in half because it has to communicate with the base and then with you and then with the base. The Eero does it behind the scenes so you get full speed. Of course, WPA2 encryption. You can create a guest network. There's so many nice features. I can actually, and I do this all the time, I can say to my Echo, pause Michael's internet, and our 14-year-old is kicked off the internet until such time as I deign to unpause it. It's a great punishment. I can look at my Eero right now, see how everything's doing, what devices. Actually, this is even cooler. This is my mom's Eero I'm looking at. I loved the Eero so much when I got the new one, I sent her the old one, set up her Eero at home. So I can actually check my mom's network. There's all sorts of nice features with the Eero. Let me change my account so I can show you what I've got going on my account. Switch network. So that's my mom's network. Here's my home network. My mom had 7 connected devices. I have 36 connected devices. That's why you need an Eero, folks. Eero has some really nice features. For instance, I can filter with the family profiles. I can filter. I've basically assigned every device in the house to me, to Lisa, or to Michael, our 14-year-old. I can control with safe filters the kinds of things Michael can see. I can block adult content, illegal or criminal, violent content. I've got safe search turned on. It, of course, finds malware, adware, ransomware, and blocks it throughout the house. I've scheduled a pause for Michael every evening at 10 p.m. The internet goes off on his devices because it's time for bed. And I tell you, if you've got a teenager, that is huge. You can pause and unpause the internet on devices. This Eero fundamentally changes your relationship with your Wi-Fi. It's the greatest thing ever. I want you to check it out. You can build a Wi-Fi system that's more tailored to your home than ever before. They've been doing this now. In fact, I think this is their second, is it their anniversary? They've been doing it since 2016. And the new Thread radio in the Eero, I haven't played with this yet. I can't wait. It lets you connect to low-power devices like locks, doorbells, and other sensors over the Thread network. It's so easy. If you need more beacons, I actually have 5 Eeros in my mom's place, not because she has such a big house, but she has an upstairs, downstairs, and then she has her studio at back, and I wanted to have connection everywhere. Free overnight shipping in the U.S. and Canada when you go to eero.com, select overnight shipping, and enter TWIT to make it free. So you can have, you could get an Eero tomorrow, and your life will change for the better. Don't forget to use the code TWIT to get free overnight shipping in the U.S. and Canada. Eero.com. I could go on and on. I could show you so many more things I can do with it. It is truly awesome. We're talking about
and
tech.
Yes,
Brianna?
No. I was going to say I ran tests with mine, and I was paying like $119 a month for Verizon Fios, but it wasn't going fast enough throughout my house. So
yeah, the router was the bottleneck.
Oh, it was amazing. Like, it's literally 3 times faster in my bedroom than it was, yeah. And it's twice as fast in the front of the house. It's just a freaking amazing product.
I got a little side business. I wired the neighbor up. I swear to God. People now call me and say, my Wi-Fi is bad. Can you help? And I go, yeah, I got the solution. Let me just come over with some Eeros here. I got it all fixed up. it's kind of amazing. Erin Griffiths is here. She writes for Wired Magazine, senior writer there. Actually, is it Wired Magazine or do you just say Wired?
It's just Wired.
It's Wired. It's the magazine. It's the website.
We're multi-platform. We're on Snapchat. We're on Facebook. We've got it all.
You know, it's great to have you, Erin. Great to have Dan Patterson from CBS Interactive, Brianna Wu, Space Cat Gal from Giant Space Cat. She's also running for Congress. I have to say, I thought for a while Instagram was just going to knock Snapchat out. The stock market apparently thought the same thing. Snapchat, it's not over, is it?
No.
I think it's interesting that publishers are using Snapchat as a way to get to a young audience, right?
They have a loyal audience. The problem is that they're possibly being kneecapped in their growth.
By Instagram, by Facebook.
That older audience isn't necessarily going to join now because they have Instagram. And overseas, Facebook owns an app. They acquired an Israeli company that helps people manage their data that is apparently hurting Snapchat. I've heard anecdotally that, you know, Snapchat's one of the biggest data hogs around. And so people, especially overseas, who are looking to decrease their data usage, Snap is actually being hurt by this.
Interesting. So Snap's growth then is really in the older population. Because I just saw a story that... from Piper Jaffray, they surveyed teens in the U.S. about media habits. They do this in spring and fall. 47% of surveyed teens say Snapchat is their preferred social media, and that's up from 39%. In other words, Snapchat is growing among young people. Still tops for teens.
The one benefit they have is Gen Z coming up is the biggest is bigger than millennials. So the problem is, as a public company, it's really hard to satisfy investors and deliver that kind of consistent growth. Twitter obviously has struggled with that their whole lifetime as a publicly traded company, and Snap's gonna struggle with it too. The question is, does Evan Spiegel really care? And the answer seems to be, so far, not really.
Well, and my experience in media is you always want the younger audience, because the theory is they'll grow old with you, and the older audience
fickle.
Is going to die. Are they fickle? That's the problem. Kids today, I swear.
And Snap's loyalty numbers are hurting as well.
Interesting. What does that mean? They're growing among teens, but their teens aren't as loyal?
Yeah, the last time we did numbers on this might have been 6 months ago, so it's aged a little bit. But that they are willing to jump platform, it's more the features and less the – they're not as tied to the brand.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? There are some businesses, Facebook might be one, where you get to a point, a critical mass, where the network effect is so strong. Nobody – I don't think anybody could do to Facebook what Facebook did to MySpace, right?
Yeah, that's probably a fair assessment. And the problem really is that you can't, it's almost impossible for someone to build the next Facebook now, because Facebook is so aggressively squashing any startup that gets any kind of traction.
Well, that's why they own Instagram, right?
Correct. Yeah. But even they're going even earlier, they're going even earlier with that, where they, you know, there was a story in, I think, the Wall Street Journal a month or so ago about this video, asynchronous video chat company called House Party. It started as Meerkat, which everyone remembers. They pivoted to this thing called House Party that was getting a lot of traction. And Facebook immediately launched like four different versions of a copycat just to try to squash them. And they'll spend any amount of money. I mean, similar to the aggressiveness of Amazon. Amazon, I guess, back in the day, on pricing. But Facebook has shown that they don't want any other social startup of any type, any other social product, to get to scale. They'll do anything to squash it.
It's reminiscent. The tactics are reminiscent of Microsoft in the early and mid 90s.
Engulf and devour.
Yeah, perhaps that's a better analogy.
Well, but and there were
Amazon and diapers.com.
Right. There you go. Diapers.com.
No, I think you're dead on.
Yeah. Jeff Bezos very famously was threatened by diapers.com. So he manipulated the market, dropped prices on Amazon for diapers, basically practically killed diapers.com, then bought them.
Wasn't there a story where they had developed an algorithm that would, whenever diapers would lower their price, Amazon's prices would automatically go to the exact same level?
Yeah.
that seems like that should be illegal, but is it? Maybe it's not. I mean, if you could say Amazon was a monopoly, then you could perhaps go after them with antitrust.
Well, they're a monopoly online. Although, did you see this week? There was a story about how Target and Walmart, which now employs Mark Lohr of Jet.com, which has, you know, spent his entire career trying to get back at Amazon for the diapers.com situation.
He started diapers.com, then started Jet to try to get back at him. Then Jet was bought by Walmart.
And now they're teaming up with Target and creating this anti-Amazon alliance to try to somehow get some traction on the internet. It's fascinating.
Not just Target and Walmart, Google, because Google doesn't have the shopping breadth that Amazon and the Echo have.
And Google has a lot of money at stake, because if you start to shop directly through the Amazon app or through your Alexa or through whatever Amazon invents next, and you're not Googling socks or whatever you want and then clicking on that sponsored Amazon ad, that's a huge chunk of money that Amazon pays for those ads that now is completely circumvented.
It's fascinating. We talked last week about the architect who is suing Google because they did kind of the same thing. He claims engulfed and devoured. They signed an NDA with him. They acquired his firm, or they licensed his technology, and then just said, yeah, thanks anyway, and built the same thing themselves. And he got a judge last week to agree that that this lawsuit could now be extended to racketeering, which is, of course.
Whoa.
Yeah. So.
Wow, that's extremely significant, because what happens a lot, especially with companies like Google and Salesforce even, is that they have a venture capital arm that kind of does the scouting and maybe even invests in some of these companies and then buys a competitor or builds it themselves. And it's so common. You hear stories about this all the time. And so for someone to actually be able to get justice out of it is going to be definitely going
to
change.
But he's going to be able to sue on those grounds that essentially the assertion that Google has a pattern of stealing trade secrets from people by inviting them to collaborate, which is, of course, what Microsoft was accused of doing in the 90s. And apparently
there was just
Facebook
a situation, a startup that had gotten investment from Amazon's Alexa fund had publicly accused them of basically copying whatever. Oh, God, my Alexa just turned on.
Say Echo. You're having the same problem all of our listeners are. I caution you all. I should probably have told you this before the show. Say the word Echo instead of anything else. And if you use Siri, it's all on you. We can't help you.
I just happen to be sitting 5 feet from it.
No. But everybody who listens, if they're listening on an Echo, right, as soon as you say the A word, things happen.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
I have yet to buy a dollhouse or anything, but I've tried. I have.
Well, the name of the fund actually is the
Scalic
Fund. Yeah.
Say Alexa.
Anyway,
Who is the professor? We're going to interview him on triangulation in a couple of weeks. It's Scott. Karsten doesn't remember either. But he is the guy who's recently got a lot of press by saying Silicon Valley has worn out its welcome, but more importantly, that it's time for government and regulators.
It's Scott Galloway.
Galloway, thank you.
He's the head of that firm we were mentioning earlier, L2.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, how interesting. I thought he was a professor, or is he both?
He's both.
Man, some people have way too much energy.
He just wrote this book, the Big Four or whatever.
It's on my list. I've got to read it. So he's a clinical professor of marketing, which is weird. I don't know what that means. Clinical professor of marketing at the New York University Stern School of Business. And he was named one of the best 50 best business school professors by Poets and Quants. So there's that. Ooh. And he founded L2. How interesting. But he's also asserting that it's time for government to regulate these companies, that they have now verged into this territory where they're actually a threat. And this is a thread through this show, because their power, their huge social power allowed Russians to mess with us. Is this, Brianna, you're going to be sitting in the halls, the hallowed halls of Congress in 2019. What are you going to do?
I mean, I'm not
Congressperson Wu. What are you going to do?
I'm not going to make it so these companies can't innovate. You know, something we talked about the last time I was on your show, Leo, was for whatever reason, you know, government is managing to do less and less, you know, for many, many reasons.
So maybe we need these technology companies.
I do see like Google's Alphabet arm coming forward and doing a lot of really interesting technology with addressing global warming.
Look what they did in Puerto Rico. They're putting Project Loon balloons up over Puerto Rico. They got permission from the FCC to give Puerto Rico wireless connectivity.
Yeah, so I'm very suspicious of anything that kind of uses them, kind of uses tech as like something to blame for every problem we have in the United States right now.
Yes.
I don't agree with that. Now, if you're talking about like regulating ads on Facebook the way we regulate ads on television, that seems different. Very reasonable to me. But I see the forces coming against all these companies, and I do think that they need to think about their approach, because it's clearly generating public sentiment for this. But, you know, me personally, would I be part of this? No.
It's what my friend Jeff Jarvis would call techno panic. And it's very easy to stimulate among people. And you know, with privacy concerns, with concerns about big business, with antitrust concerns. But it's really important to remind everybody about the amazing advantages, the amazing things we've been able to do thanks to these big companies. And so you really want to, I think, balance any regulation.
I agree with you 100% with
I think it's time for preserving these companies to I mean what we saw with Weinstein exists within the technology industry and other
let's face it, anywhere men are in charge, it exists.
Yes, and I so say everywhere. Because of the tech industry, because the tech industry will face, whether it's rational or not, they will face winds of disapproval in the coming years. And if we want reasonable regulation and if we want a reasonable conversation, these companies need to stick their hubris in the backseat and say, there are things that we could be better actors in some ways, and here are the ways that we are doing those things. We care about you and we care about your privacy or whatever. Like, the messaging is very bad right now, and I think that it's kind of tone deaf to the sentiment that exists through the rest of the country. It takes one recession for people to kind of change their attitude about these companies.
Yeah. Well, I think that's actually, to be fair to Professor Galloway, that's kind of what he's urging, is that the tide is changing, and it's time for companies to sit up, take notice, and do the right and be proactive.
And the big question, I mean, I don't really realistically think that major antitrust action could be successful and break up one of these companies. But the biggest question in any antitrust case is consumer choice. And I think the thing that scares a lot of people is the realization that you actually don't have a lot of choices in what technology services that you use. I mean, you can't live your life carrying around a flip phone, not using Gmail if that's what your company uses, and buy. I mean, to live your life outside of the big four tech companies would be to kind of be in a cabin in the woods. It's almost impossible. And I think that's what's a little bit scary, is that we don't really have as much choice as we think we do.
Yeah. These are big, big issues. But since we have a future congressperson here, I think we need to bring them up. Poor Brianna. You know, we are going to be calling you. We're going to be writing you. You're going to be our point person.
I will take
Congress.
Like calls. Absolutely. Good. I would love to hear from TWiT listeners.
Good. Let's see here. Let's take a break. We have quite a bit more to talk about. Great panel here, Brianna Wu. Don't forget the website, BriannaWu2018.com. Aaron Griffith is here from the fabulous Wired platform and from CBS Interactive. Dan Patterson, senior writer at Tech Republic. We had a great week on TWiT. We had a fun week on TWiT. Yes, Karsten, prepare that. We have a set up the projector. Get the AV squad in here. Set up the screen, because we have a little video to show you. Watch.
Previously on TWiT.
Hi, Mom.
Hey, sweetie. How are you?
My mom, Mary. Say hi to Megan and the gang on iOS today.
Megan, I'm happy to say hi.
Hi, Mary.
I know what Megan looks like.
iOS today.
If your parents are confused about tech, we have ways to help you help them.
I'm a good person to interview because you have consistently given me every single device as it comes up.
Triangulation.
It makes it harder to make sci-fi when you're trying to be real, right? I mean, it would be so much easier if you could add one or two elements of traditional space sci-fi and say, yeah, we don't have to worry about taking a shuttle from the ship to the station because I just transport over.
It makes it different, but part of what defines the feeling about any project is the choice of obstacles. By choosing a different set of obstacles than the usual, it does mean we have to think things through. It does mean sometimes we have to chew things out that we wouldn't have had to do if we'd done something more familiar. But it also means we get things that nobody else has gotten to do.
TWiT, it's where your brain and tech meet.
I have a bunch of Luddite friends who are scared. They don't have this son I have. I'm so sorry for them.
Mom, by the way, wants a show now. By the way, I'm just going to say she called me back. She said, can I be on every week? I'd like a show. And I'm thinking about it. I'm considering it. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. If you're looking for a way to get those tech skills so you can get a great job in IT, and I know great many of you either work in IT or would like to work in IT, or maybe you do work in IT and you just want to keep up to date, IT Pro TV is such a great resource to keep you and your team, if they have a great team platform too, up to date. They have kind of blown me away. They modeled what they were doing on what we did at Tech TV and TWIT. They now have 5 studios. They're cranking out so much great content, 125 hours of new courseware every single week, 2,000 hours plus of on-demand training for getting the certs in every area, Certified Ethical Hacker, Kali Linux, Microsoft Server, AWS SysOps Administrator, CompTIA Security Plus, how to, you know, run a Windows network, a Macintosh network, and I go on and on and on. You can watch these anytime. They stream them, of course, on your computer, but also iOS, Android. They work on Chromecast. They have a Roku app. They have an Apple TV app. You can watch on your big screen TV, then get in the car, listen on your phone, get to work and watch on your computer and learn all the time. Whether you're looking for a CISSP or a CISA or CEH, you get the certs you need, you get the skills you need. And if you are managing an IT team, I want you to consider IT Pro TV. Their team solution gives you group pricing, a great supervisor portal where you can control your team's training schedule, create custom groups, training assignments, see individual analytics, group analytics, viewing time, downloads, course completion, tracking everything you need. They've got such a great platform. Go to the website, itpro.tv/twit, and find out how IT Pro TV can offer you or your team the best IT training solution. If you are an individual, use the offer code TWIT30 at itpro.tv/twit. You'll get a 7-day trial free. You also get 30% off for the lifetime of your account when you sign up for an individual monthly membership using the code TWIT30. And if you want to know more about the team solution, you can sign up there for a free demo of the supervisor portal. IT Pro TV. I love these guys, Tim and Don. They really, they watched what we were doing and they said, this would be a great way to learn how to be an IT professional. And they made it. itpro.tv/twit out of Gainesville, Florida. They're great guys. Use the offer code TWIT30. To try it free for 7 days and 30% off your account. Let me find something fun, something exciting. Qualcomm files a patent lawsuit against Apple in China seeking to ban the sale and manufacture of iPhones. Woohoo. Qualcomm is a sponsor. They advertise their Snapdragon Gigabit Radio, which is only on Android phones because Apple doesn't use it. But these two are in a bitter battle to the end. Apple says, we're not going to pay our $2 billion a year license fee. Maybe I'm more disposed towards Qualcomm. They invented stuff. They are charging license fees. I don't think unreasonable license fees, but maybe that's what the debate is about. But these are technologies every phone has to have there, you know. And so The battle is spreading. It's now World War III, really. It's just crazy.
My husband, he does patent law for a biotech.
What does he think?
A biotech firm. So, yeah, I asked him about this, and he sees it as just them playing really, really, really ultimate hardball.
It's very public negotiations is what it is. It's very public
negotiations. That's exactly how he reads it. You know, patents, it's like... if you look and know the companies and the law firms that do a lot of patent legislation, it ends up being like they have a pool of money that just keeps going back and forth between them because it's like defensive and offensive warfare.
Seems like there ought to be a better way. Anyway, I won't weigh in on the battle, but I don't know. I don't know. Meanwhile, OnePlus, I like the OnePlus One phones. I love them. OnePlus, remember... had a deal I can't even remember anymore, but they had an Android ROM that they used to use. Then they lost that deal. Whatever happened to that company, by the way, that was making the ROM for them? They did a deal with Microsoft. It got weird. Anyway, they created the Oxygen OS, which is essentially a pretty pure version of Android for their OnePlus phones, except... It's been discovered Chris Moore, a developer, looked and realized that his OnePlus was uploading a lot of not anonymous information back to the company, including the IEMI, the serial number, the MAC address. It was even telling the company the MAC address, when apps were opened, when the handset was unlocked. And there was no opt-in. There was no way to disable. It was a very complicated way to disable it, but no public, obvious way to disable it.
Speaking of reckless.
It's one of those things companies sometimes do, and sometimes it's just an accident, and sometimes it's like, we'll just do it until we get caught, and then we'll apologize and fix it. And I don't know which it is, but the CEO of OnePlus, the co-founder, Carl Pei, said, by the end of this month, October, we're going to fix that. Every OnePlus phone running Oxygen OS will have a prompt in the setup wizard that asks users if they want to join our user experience program. That's what they're calling it. And it will indicate that the program collects analytics, will provide terms of service agreement that explains what we collect, why. We will stop collecting telephone numbers, MAC addresses, and Wi-Fi information. The company, we wanted to give you better support, a better experience. And you know what? Companies do that. I'm glad they got caught, and I hope they do the update, and it sounds like they will. So, is it tech behaving badly, or oops, I made a mistake, I won't do it again? I don't know. You just don't know.
Well, there's no apology, so
they didn't apologize, did they?
And it's and the calling it the user experience program, like, something like that, just feels a little '94.
We just want to make a better phone. That's all. We're just trying to make a better phone.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the best idea I have, something I've thought about a lot policy wise, is how we address this, you know, IoT model that it rewards companies for collecting all the data that they can. You know, because you can sell it and you can make money for it. Right. You know, in a capitalist system, there's every incentive to capture and collect as much information as you can about your users. The best idea I have for that to kind of turn it around is right now there's not really a civil liability aspect if that information is hacked and it causes, you know, damage to the users actually having it. So I think we do have to introduce liability into that. So, you know, if they are collecting all this information about you and they're not securing it correctly, and somebody ends up hacking that, then that is very financially expensive. So I think you would punish
Equifax severely at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, they had a very high
obligation. Beyond reckless.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just the more you understand about how they screwed up, it gets you angrier and angrier. But I think like liability is the only way I can figure out to solve this problem, because you can't have regulations saying you can't collect A, B, or C. You could just make it expensive to, you know, collect and store all this information.
The Equifax story keeps getting worse, by the way. This time, this was discovered again by a security. Thank God for security researchers. And I agree with you, Brianna. We really have to indemnify them, because so often now they get prosecuted for pen testing, for finding flaws. And there's a huge disincentive for them to reveal these flaws at this point, because you don't know how the company's going to react. Equifax has a page. This is so awful. Equifax, this is recent. They fixed it. But until like a couple of days ago, they had a page, you know, where you go to dispute a line in your credit report. On that page, there was a link that would prompt you to download a phony flash player. Phony flash player. And that spammed you with ads. And Equifax's defense was, well, we didn't do it. It was a third party that we put on the website.
Oh, my God.
And then, by the way, I just saw today another firm's doing the same. Was it Experian, TransUnion?
TransUnion
was doing the same thing. Thank you.
How is it possible that there's no way to hold them accountable for this? Because I think you'd be hard pressed to find anyone to disagree that they need to be. So why can't
more than that? They should be at a higher standard. Any company that is holding really privileged information about us, and Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, they have. Novus is another one. They have all of our financial records. They have our salary history. They have our socials. They have our credit card numbers. They have our addresses. They have everything. Driver's license. They have everything. They need to be held to a much higher standard. It's a crap business they're in. They sell that information to other companies. I understand we need this stuff because you can't apply for credit if you can't somehow prove that you're credit worthy. I get it. but they've got to be held to a super high standard. Now, somebody proposed, I think it was Johnny Jett on my radio show this weekend, and I thought this was a great idea. Brianna can do this. We're going to give you another bill you can write. The credit freeze, which is what your response is now to this, which is to you have mm-hmm. to go to each individual credit reporting agency, say, put a freeze on my account. Nobody can ask for my data without my permission. If I want to apply for credit, I'll unfreeze it for that particular use and then freeze it again. That, I love this, should be the default now. These companies yeah. can collect the data. I understand it needs to be, but it should be me that releases that data, not them. It should be frozen. The only person that should be able to get my data is me or a company I specifically allow to do that. What do you think of that?
I think it's really funny you mentioned that. We're about to put out a proposal that's very similar to that. You know, it is really time to admit that social security number plus birth date is a very hackable basis for your identity. And we need to like get a little bit past that. So what we're going to be proposing is the social security and privacy number. And I'll
But you're going to get people going crazy because they're going to say, no, that's a nationwide ID system.
It's true, but we already have that. But the way we're going to do it is we're going to put it all in your hands, exactly like you said. So along with your social security card or driver's license, you will get embedded in that, you know, a public key and a private key.
Yes.
So, you know, yes, Equifax can go through and they can collect that information about you. But if I open up a bank account, I have to use my private key with my public yes. key to generate something. If they lose my trust, I can revoke that certificate, just like Microsoft can revoke a certificate. So we've got to like bring modern security standards to like applying for credit, because right now identity theft is just, it's a huge, it's a cost for us because we don't choose to do business with Equifax.
Yeah. So well, that's brilliant. This is why we need to elect people like Brianna and more people like Brianna to Congress, because there are technological solutions. I understand the big problem is authentication, but we have, it's well known, a very good system for authentication. It's the public key crypto. And I love this idea. My federal ID, my ID should be my public key, which I generate myself. I can revoke at any time. And I keep held to my chest, my private key. No one else can get access to that. That's a great idea, Brianna. And that is strong authentication. It solves yeah. this whole problem.
It's pretty straightforward. We've been doing it everywhere else for the last 15, 20 years. So, you know, let's bring this to something very, very important, your credit, your identity.
You know, Estonia.
What's the biggest barrier to stopping us from doing that? I don't cover security that much, so I'm curious.
Yeah.
Consumer adoption.
Well, it would be standards. It would be standards across all the different state lines. So you'd have to pass some, you know, like federal standard. It's weird. If you think about driver's licenses as recently as the 80s, you didn't even have to have your picture on it right. in some states. Right. So, we basically need to make a standard that's federal, and we need to mandate that you ought to bring people in to like update their social security card or driver's license. So, you know, it's a lot of small details.
I'll tell you why it's a non-starter in the United States, actually, Aaron, because we're paranoid. And a lot of the problems that we have in the United States come from our national identity. There's a new book, which I just downloaded on Audible, about how since day one in the United States, we have always believed in fake news, conspiracy theories. This is part of our national identity. It comes from our notion that the individual is supreme and that everybody's entitled to their own opinion and beliefs. And it's one of the things that keeps this, because what it would be identified immediately as a national ID card. And there are many, many people in the United States who are basically paranoid, who say, nope, not going to happen. And it is I can tell you right now, it's a non-starter in Congress. All you have to do is say national ID and that's it. It's over.
Yep. It's not going anywhere.
Here's a country that has it. Estonia. Anybody in the world can get one of these. And I was in Estonia and I meant to do it. And I didn't get around to it. They have a national state-issued digital ID card that has on it a 2048-bit public key on a chip. You have a card. It is your national health insurance card. It's your proof of identification when logging into bank accounts. It's your digital signature. You use it to vote, check medical records, submit tax claims, get prescriptions. And they make one available, a similar card available to anybody in the world. And this is brilliant. It's exactly what you just described. And the reason it's a non-starter, I think, and I'll vote for you, Brianna, again and again. I won't stop you, but I do know that this is one of those hot button issues. I know this. I've worked in AM talk radio long enough.
Yeah.
This is a hot button issue for some reason.
Estonia also has 1 million
people.
Yeah, Dan, it's like it's the equivalent of take our guns away. It is just
it's just never going to happen. And federalism. I mean, there is a national identity in the national.
Can't you rebrand it somehow?
I'm sorry?
Rebrand it.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what has to happen.
Well, especially if you can generate your own public key. Of course, you're not going to do that, right? Because
no,
mom's not going to do that. My mom could do that, but most people aren't going to do that.
I mean, but you could start even if it wasn't like a federal ID card.
Make it grassroots. Like,
That's the place you start the discussion. But then you go, okay, so in exchange for not coming down really heavily regulating like Equifax and companies like that, okay, so can you agree to use this standard? Can you agree that, you know, for you to open up new accounts, you need to use this standard? I sometimes get frustrated when people say X can't be done. And because it's like the expectation that something can't be done drives the whole conversation. Yeah. No. It's a fair point. Like we should be clear-eyed and realistic about this. But I think like just because you start a discussion at a certain point doesn't mean like look at one political party in the United States. They take the most extreme view. And then, you know, even when they get something in the middle, it's a win. And I think as far as updating, like, you know, cryptographic standards, there has to be someone that's out there, like, pushing better practices.
There is. I mean, I do this. Yeah. And maybe we need to get everybody people who watch and listen to our shows are techies. I publish my PGP key, my public key. Everywhere I go, I sign emails with it. You can have it. Here it is. It's long because I made a 4,096-bit key because I don't want anybody to crack it. But that's my public key. And if you ever doubt that I am who I say I am, take my public key and say, okay, Leo, prove your identity with your private key. If you get an email from me, you can validate that not only did I send it, and I it wasn't changed since I sent it. This is a great system.
What do we do if and when quantum happens?
Make it a 8,192-bit. Seriously, there's no real impediment to making these keys prohibitively long. And I'm not convinced. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert on quantum computing. The theory is that some computing technology massively parallel perhaps will come along and eliminate public key crypto. We'll have to come up with something else. But it works right now. Works really well. God damn it. Why'd you have to say that? how close are we, Dan? Is quantum just around the corner?
I don't think we're close, but I talked to some people who say 5 years, and I talked to some people who say we're 5 years from AGI too, which is nonsense. But
what's AGI?
I mean 40 years? Artificial General Intelligence, is, incidentally, speaking of companies squashing competition, the entire academic world is pretty pissed at Google for acquiring much of the great minds in AI right now and putting them to use within DeepMind or on projects DeepMind has dreamed up. But I don't know, 40 years maybe, but it will happen. And that means all secrets retroactively will disappear.
Well, not if you use perfect forward secrecy, right? You can use.
Yes. Right. Yeah. All right.
It's possible.
I have a question about that Google thing, though. Like, didn't those people go there voluntarily? It's not.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. I mean,
Google said, I'll give you $1 million, Aaron, if you join our research team. Who's going to say no to that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a nuanced conversation, but the conversation that people are having is that the company is coming in with a bunch of capital that nobody can meet. We need some of those people to remain academics.
And Google made that compute engine and the special artificial intelligence machine learning processor array and all sorts of stuff. But it is a wide open field, right, Dan? And it's a competitive field.
Yeah.
And I think anybody can do it right now. I'm not sure I'm in a hurry for AGI. Whole conversation could be moot if the machines get smarter than us. Here's a good one. 37,000 Chrome users downloaded a fake AdBlock Plus extension. It seems like Chrome extensions, there's no security. There's a Chrome extension store if you use Chrome. And AdBlock Plus, which is a legitimate ad blocker, many people want to get it, but the problem is they went to the store and downloaded the wrong one. It got through Google's verification process and lived in the official Chrome store for a while. They've taken down the listing after Tay-Tay Swift on security. I love this Taylor Swift on security account, by the way. I'm sure everybody knows about Swift on security. Bet Dan knows who it is.
No idea.
Why are more people trying to figure out who this is? A security person who poses as Taylor Swift. I love it. Anyway, once Swift on Security revealed it, Google pulled it down. But that was after 37,000 people downloaded it. Mm. They got to fix that process. That's a big hole. Oculus had their Oculus Connect event this week. They announced something interesting, a standalone VR headset for $200. Doesn't even require a phone. Is this what...
I'm excited about
it. Yeah, is this what we've been waiting for?
Yeah.
This is going to bring VR to the masses.
I mean, does anyone else here actually play VR games? Because when I'm playing Raw Data and I'm shooting people and stabbing them with the sword, but the wire gets in the way. It really does from really being immersed in the experience. So, I'm not quite sold that it's going to work yet at that price point, but I'm definitely excited to see this come out.
Pretty cool. And then they have a new Oculus, the Santa Cruz, the future of Rift.
Yes.
A standalone headset, just like you're talking about, but the power of the Oculus Rift, I guess they've got a PC built in somehow, and inside-out position tracking, which means no more cameras. With the Rift and the Vive, you have to have external devices that position you in space. I have all of that stuff. I don't find myself, running to play VR games anymore. It feels like a cool gimmick, but maybe I'm, I don't know.
No, I think you're dead on with that. I think it's really telling that Epic, spent all this money and produced, Robo Recall, which is one of the very best Oculus Rift games.
Yeah.
But no one's ever played it. I've never talked to another gamer in my entire life that's played it. And just like you, Leo, I played my Super Nintendo Classic a lot more this month than I did my Oculus in the last year.
You know what people are playing? The number one game in America right now? Cuphead.
Yes.
Yes. 1 million copies sold. A $20 game. It's been in development for many, many years. They showed it at E3. When did they show it, Brianna, at E3? Like 2013, I think. A long time ago.
It's been in development a while. Yeah.
But gosh,
you have
darn
to
it.
See the art style.
You want to play it? I have it right here.
Oh, it's so gorgeous.
I can't stop playing Cuphead. It is the music, the art. It is a retro game that is a lot of fun to play. But what I love is, it's two brothers, right? I feel like as a small group, what I love is that they succeeded so wildly that
by chance they came on Devil's Game, and gosh, they paid the price.
So let's see. This is not me. I'm gonna cop to something here. My 14-year-old's playing under my account, and he is almost done with the game. So I am. This is not me. This is way too hard for me. But I can't. It's a fun game because you don't mind dying. You keep playing. Oh! 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 I only want more life. Ah! And that's the saga of my Cuphead experience. Oh. Yeah. I think this is a new tradition on Twit. We have to play it every episode. I'm badly hooked to the Cuphead. Now, how do I get it off my screen? I want to go back to the news. Oh, there we go. Okay. 1 million copies of it. They went platinum in like a few days or something. It's pretty great. Shell says, I like this. This is to me, this is super good news. Shell is buying an electric car charging company. Shell, of course, the big gasoline company, is probably rightly so concerned that people might not be buying gasoline, petrol, eventually. They plan to launch electric charging in the majority of their 45,000 gas stations. This is, to me, an acknowledgement, and I think a very important one, that we are moving rapidly towards a renewables future. And you know what's doing it? The economics. Lawmakers couldn't make it happen. The industry didn't make it happen. Economics are going to make it happen.
I think it's also overseas competition because it's going to happen in China far before it comes to the U.S. And I think people and companies see that, and they see European adoption ramping up too. It's a lot of looking around and realizing we're behind.
The good news is there's kind of an unlimited amount of sun hitting this planet, and if we could really get efficient at turning it into energy, we wouldn't need to dig up things or split atoms. We could just use sun power. I was talking to somebody about this, and the seems to be the agreement is the issue is not collecting it. We actually are getting very good at collecting it, is storing it, because of course the sun doesn't shine all the time. We need better ways to store the power it's generated. Let's take a break. We're gonna have fun. Go ahead. I'll let Brianna speak.
No. I was just gonna say I'm definitely all in on renewable energy. It's such an important policy issue. And as you said, like, China is kicking our butt on it. It's so important. But at the same time, I love cars.
I know. We talked about this last time.
I'm so worried about
all the other cars. You want a gas-powered car.
I do. I'm about to buy a Porsche Cayman, and I hate that it's going to be obsolete in 20 years. So.
Yeah, but you know, like, a lot of people still love records, and they find places to buy them, and they listen to them.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like books. There'll be and vinyl records. There'll be a collector's guild or something. There'll be a way to do it. It might be very expensive.
Oh,
but I don't think gas engines, internal combustion engines, are going to go away. But imagine what the world would be like if 50% of them were replaced by electric. Just 50%. Massive change.
A lot of people in self-driving world like to compare car ownership to horse ownership.
Yeah, I'm not sure I buy that, and that's mostly because I think that there's a lot of psychological barriers to self-driving. I know there's some economic reasons for it, and I think there's also some technical barriers. It may not. I mean, it's not quite there. I speak as a Tesla owner. I'm not sure I would take my hands off the wheel just yet.
Hey, Leo, I know you got to do a spot, but I got to scram here. I got an engagement.
DP, great to have you on the show. Dan Patterson, he is senior writer at Tech Republic at CBS Interactive. We didn't get to talk about the Kiev summit that you were at in this summer.
Soon.
Let's get you back real soon. We'll talk about it.
And thank you, Aaron and Brianna. It was great to speak with you.
Great to have you, Dan.
Likewise. Yeah.
Take care. Actually, we'll wrap this up after one word from a sponsor. It's all about my Ring video doorbell, another product I am absolutely in love with. We've had our Ring doorbell. We installed it a couple of years ago. Easy to install. And it transformed, I don't know, my sense of my home. So the Ring Video doorbell is a doorbell. I unscrewed my old doorbell. I have a wired doorbell. They have a battery powered one as well. I unscrewed it, put the Ring on. Took me about an hour because I'm not a handyman. They have videos. It's pretty easy to do. They even give you all the tools you need to do it. And now I can see anybody at my front door when they ring the doorbell. I can answer it even if I'm not home. I can answer it from my phone. I can say, hey, yeah, what is it? Now the latest thing is they've added this new – completely expanding their offerings. They've got now the home security system, and they've got this, the Ring floodlight cam, which I'm putting in all around my house. I have lights around my house, but I'm going to replace about four of them with this. Not only because these are motion activated floodlights, that's a great thing. They're LED, so they don't burn out. I love that. They use the same wiring that my outdoor lights do, but they also have this on them. It's an HD camera, a speaker, a microphone. I can see what's going on outside in my yard. The lights come on. Somebody comes in my backyard, lights come on. I can see who it is. I'll get a notification on my phone, even if I'm somewhere in the world. We were in France looking at our doorbell. Look, it's fantastic. You know who's at your house. You know what's going on. You know what packages have been left. I knew that my iPhone 8 had arrived. I love it. Then this camera is fantastic because you can see intruders in your yard. You can speak to them, try to scare them off. And if you can't, there's a button on the app. You press and the 110 decibel alarm goes off. And believe me, that's when they go a-running. Ring is getting better and better. If you haven't been to ring.com/twit in a while, check out all of the great new products at Ring. And we've got a deal on their Ring of Security Kit. You could choose from the original Ring or the Ring Pro and get one, two, or three of the brand new floodlight cams. Really surround your home with security and get up to $150 off. Wall Street Journal called the Ring the best of CES 2017, and I agree 100%. I'm not too nervous. It's not for me. It's not about security. It's about knowing what's going on. Knowing what's going on around the house, who's coming and going. It's fantastic. Ring.com/twit. Save up to $150 off your new Ring of Security Kit. All right. Final story, and amazing. Then we'll let everybody go home. you like all of our advertisers, Bran. I have to say, I'm going to vote for you three times now.
I like that. You know, there's a product that Google put out that competes in the same space, and it's terrible. Like, you have to buy jackets off of Amazon for it to be, you know, usable outside.
You're talking about the Nest.
Nest IQ
cam. So,
yep.
Okay. And this has nothing to do with the fact that they're not a sponsor. I bought Nest IQ cams, bought Nest outdoor cams. The IQ cam is supposed to recognize you after a while. The other day, it said, there's an intruder in your house. I looked. It was Mylar balloons. It is the dumbest artificial. And I ended up taking it out and bringing it here because it's like Lisa said, no, I don't want that camera in the house. That's crazy. Mylar balloons. But it was great. It zoomed right in on them. I had a great image of them. All right. Let's do our final story. The U.S. and Japan in a giant robotic duel on Twitch.
Whoa.
7 o'clock this Tuesday, America's giant fighting robot. This could end war as we know it. It's
oh my.
Back in July 2015, a U.S. team of engineers, Megabots Incorporated, challenged their Japanese rivals, Suidobashi Heavy Industry, to a fight. But they never found a venue, and of course upgrading the robots has taken some time, but they're finally these are mechs with people inside them. I think there's absolutely no technical story here, but I just can't wait.
Oh my God, that looks so awesome. I'm all in on this. I'm all in.
And, yes. You know, finally I can chant USA, USA, and really mean it. Really, really. The battle of the robots, and I think it's kind of a coup. Look at this. This is a great picture of the Megabots team next to there.
Oh my gosh.
That's a mech. I don't know what those weapons are, but I hope they're potato cannons.
Yeah, what is it, fire missiles?
I know.
Wow.
I hope it's not anything lethal.
I just hope they're not destroyed after this so they can go on tour afterwards.
There's six... I live in Boston. I need that to get around town. Like, that sounds great.
So The Verge is quick to point out that it's not really Pacific Rim. Okay, they're big, 16 and 13 feet tall, but they're slow and have limited mobility. So they say it's going to be more like Rock'em Sock'em Robots than it is Pacific Rim. On the other hand, they're 12 tons and they have 8-foot long chainsaws. So, you know.
I'll take it.
It could be fun. We'll be covering that. And also, it's a happy ending. The 40th anniversary of the thing that got me into computing. My first personal computer, the Atari 2600 game machine. Remember this? Loved it. Now, I know there's a whole Nintendo generation out there, and they're probably laughing at us right now, Brianna. But this was the I was dropped so much money playing coin-op tank that I said, I can't afford to keep doing this. So I bought a 2600 and started playing it at home. And that kind of, after that, I got an Atari 400, then an 800, then I got a North Star Advantage, then I got then the IBM PC came out, then I got that, then I got a Macintosh, and well, the rest is history. So I think this was the gateway drug. The Atari 2600 is 40 years old today, 30 million units in its lifetime. And apparently,
it's iconic. It's a classic box. I have to ask, what do you think about the Atari boxes coming out? I'm very skeptical about the success of that.
Is it like the Nintendo where you're playing the same old games?
No, that would be great. That sounds like a great product. Oh. They are basically putting out it's a low powered Linux box.
I wasn't aware
it's going to have older games on it, but it's going to like split the difference between a high powered PC and like a mid level PC. So I just don't think people are going to spend $400 for that. But that's just my opinion.
We will get one and get a review unit. That sounds really interesting. Right. I wasn't aware of that. It's called the Atari box.
That's it. You can even get one with the wood panel finish like the
now
ugly.
That I'm gonna buy. That I'm gonna buy. Look at that. No, that's sweet. It is a retro gaming console, but it's not the really old games like Nintendo. It is gonna run Linux. That's interesting. 90,000 fans have registered to learn more about it. AMD processor, Radeon graphics. Yeah, I wouldn't buy it for a PC, but that's a sweet-looking little... The original Atari probably had vinyl wood grain, so... Aaron Griffith, so much pleasure having you here. I know you ran like 13 miles today, and I
am not very... quite. I'm still training.
Oh, you're still training. All right.
Well, working my way up to that.
I'm grateful that you were here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Wired Magazine and Wired.com. She's now senior writer over there covering, whatever she wants. Business
and tech.
And tech and anything you're interested in. Thank you so much for being here today, Aaron. Thanks
for having
me. Brianna Wu. She fought the alt-right and won. Giant Space Cat founder and now candidate for the Democratic Party, well, soon to be candidate for the Democratic Party in Massachusetts 8th District, but you got to vote in the primary. So make sure you go, you donate, you find out more if you live in Massachusetts. I was just joking about voting 8 times for you. Unless the Russians decide to help. We also thank Dan Patterson for being here, senior writer with the Tech Republic. Thank you all for joining us on a Sunday afternoon. We do the show about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. 2300 UTC. If you'd like to stop by and watch live, you can at twit.tv/live. You can also join us in our fabulous chat room, irc.twit.tv. It's always a great bunch in there. We always have a lot of fun, the kids behind the scenes. We also have an open studio on Sundays if you want to come by and visit us, as the entire Dougherty family did. They're here, they're in town for a wedding, and that's where Rose came from. And where's Rose? Oh, she's outside. She's with Dad right now. Oh, good. All right. I see Rose's mom. I thought, oh dear. Rose has decided to join the Rebel Alliance, and we're not going to see hide or hair for quite some time. Anyway, if you want to be here in studio, we'd love to have you. Just make sure you email us, because we really need to know ahead of time so our guard doesn't shoot you. The email is... No, he was a nice guy, right? Yeah, he is armed. The email is tickets at twit.tv. That's a statement on the modern world, isn't it? That we have to have an armed guard at the door. But I thought it'd be better to protect our staff than not. I would hate to feel guilty about that. We do make on-demand versions available of all of our shows on the website, twit.tv. Please subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. It's a great way to start your week with This Week in Tech. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for being here. And now I have to say, another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Doing the twit.